Well, it's wonderful to be with you this morning. If you've come in late, my name is Wayne, and I'm the Archdeacon for Chaplaincy here in the Diocese. I get to spend a great deal of time meeting with chaplains and meeting with people in all kinds of places in life. People who are usually crossing a threshold, either at university from childhood and into adulthood. I get to meet people in hospital who are crossing a threshold from one phase of life and into another. And as I meet with people, I'm always reminded of these two stories that we've heard today. Two stories that we can find puzzling and perplexing in so many ways. But I think both of these stories are really relevant to us here this morning at Holy Covenant, because they offer us a picture of what it's like to be God's covenant people. So I wanted to start this morning by looking a little closely at the story of Jacob. We find the story starts as Jacob is sitting beside the river that one day would become the boundary between Israel and the other lands. As you may recall, Jacob was Isaac's boy. He was the grandchild of Abraham. Decades earlier, Abraham had received this great promise from God, this great covenant, that I will make you a great nation and I will bless you. I will make your name great and you will be a blessing. What a wonderful thing to receive, isn't it? And so Jacob stands in this line of blessing. But I bet you on that night, sitting beside that river, Jacob felt anything but blessed. I wonder if he sat there feeling worthless, feeling all but a dead man because of what he'd done to his brother. You see, Jacob and Esau had what we might call form. Esau was the number one son, someone that every dad would feel proud of. But Jacob, well, he was mum's boy. Esau, he was a mountain of a man. He was someone who hunted. He was someone who was active. He was someone who was very, very hairy. He was the kind of guy you'd expect to be playing front row for the Bunbury's. Yeah. But Jacob, well, he was a bit thin, probably a bit pale. Kind of what happens when you hang around the tent all day. Esau, he was the guy who could do anything. He could win anything. He was the guy who would pull all the girls. He was the alpha dog. He was the predator. But Jacob, well, he was the prey. He was the guy who could make a nice stew. If anyone was destined to stand in line for the blessing, it was Esau. And his number two son, well, no one was interested in Jacob. But as it turned out, Jacob wasn't the sop that everyone thought he was. Jacob, sadly, was a bit sneaky and a bit of a cheat. And he would steal this divine blessing by taking advantage of his brother's stupidity and his father's blindness. Not a nice guy. And of course, when Esau found out, Jacob had to run for his very life. And for years, he lived in a faraway land. But now, on this night, Jacob's only separated from Esau by a sliver of a creek. And I wonder if Jacob thought to himself, has his brother calmed down? Or was Esau still burning with anger, still smouldering with hate for his brother? And would Esau show up and kill Jacob on the spot? So Jacob does what any sensible guy does when he's facing a furious relative. He tries bribery. He sends hundreds of goats and sheep and camels across the stream on ahead. It's like he's handing over his bank account and his wallet, trying to assuage his brother's anger. It's not just wealth Jacob's handing over. It's all of his past accomplishments. It's everything he's struggled and schemed for. He's handing that away. And then Jacob does what any sensible guy would do when someone wants to kill him. He sends his family on next. Because maybe if bribery's not going to cut it with his angry brother, maybe if he sends his wives and his children on ahead, maybe because their pleading eyes would do the trick. But it's not just his family that he's handing over. You see, in Jacob's world, your sons were your strength. And if you were in a fight, your boys would always have your back. More importantly, your children were your future, your hope, your insurance. And Jacob had 11 of them. But we find this night seeing Jacob sitting by himself, alone, in the dark, without money, without strength, without backup. Can you imagine yourself in Jacob's shoes? Will Esau welcome me, or will he kill me? Would Esau right the wrong by killing Jacob and taking the blessing back for himself? And I wonder what would Jacob have done that night? Would he have pleaded and prayed with God, making extravagant promises? I know I would have done that. Or maybe he might have slumped back to his tent and wondered, well, whatever's going to happen is going to happen. It's good to get a good night's sleep if tomorrow you're going to be fighting to the death with your brother. But whatever Jacob expected, I bet you he did not expect what happened next. Can you imagine it? Sitting there in dark, and all of a sudden someone grabs you. Someone tears at your head, at your clothes, at your legs. I wonder if Jacob thought, who is this guy? Is it Esau? Has he come for me? Am I about to die? And then seconds turn into minutes, that turn into hours, that turn into a whole night fighting and grappling and wrestling. But as daybreak comes, this mysterious man realizes that Jacob's just not going to give up. And so he strikes Jacob right where it hurts, in the hip, the source of his strength and his power for any wrestler. I wonder who here has got a bit of a dicky hip. You know what it's like. You can't move. Getting up from a chair is hard. Can you imagine being in a fight to the death with someone and you, all you can do is hold on? Where Jacob once obtained a blessing through a deceit, he now wins a blessing through his tenacity, his endurance, his character. The man says to him, "Your name will no longer be Jacob, but Israel, because you have struggled with God and with men, and you have overcome." I wonder how Jacob felt in that moment. It was a moment of transformation, a reorientation, because he's got a new name. That's the blessing. His identity has changed. He's no longer the man known to be a liar and a thief, a deceiver, a trickster. I like how Eugene Peterson translates this bit. "You're Israel, the God wrestler. You've wrestled with God and come through." This is Jacob's true heart. This is who he is. This is the guy who never gives up. This is the guy who keeps going, even with the moment to give up passed a long time ago. It's in that moment, I think, he wonders, this isn't Esau I'm wrestling with, but God. This is the God who made the great promise to my grandfather. This is the God who made the promise to my father. This is the one who's given me all these dreams, all these years long past. I don't know about you, but when I like to encounter God, I like to meet God where it's comfortable, where it's warm. I like meeting God when I'm sitting in a chair. But I know that sometimes in my life, it's been through sickness. It's been when a close family friend has died. Those kinds of events when I feel that my heart is torn out, when I feel like my legs have been dislocated. Those moments are when God grabs me. Those are the moments when I need to grab hold of God and not let go. Jacob wins the blessing he's always desired, but it comes at a cost. As Israel, he's wounded and he'll limp each and every day for the rest of his life. All his strength has really gone. All his money and all his power is gone. And all he can do is limp into the land that God promised his father. I wonder, as a parish, do you feel a bit like Jacob? Do you feel a bit worn out, a bit bloodied, a bit bruised, a bit sore? I wonder if you feel like you've lost a lot of things too. A lot of things that have given you satisfaction. A lot of things that have given you comfort. I wonder, as you look ahead, whether you feel worried or uncertain. I wonder if you feel like someone's grabbed you, that someone or something has shaken you, that someone or something is twisting you around and around, and all you can wonder is, when will this stop? Jacob was the child of God's covenant. And although he started poorly, this God wrestler held on. You might ask me, well, how do we hold on? How does anyone hold on when you feel completely knackered? I think our gospel reading gives us a few clues today. I wonder if you might just picture yourself standing in the crowd that day. A long day and you've been following Jesus all around this lake. You came to hear him, to see him do something amazing. And it seems that the closer you get, the further away he goes. And now you're feeling tired and stuck in the middle of nowhere. The sun's going down and you're wondering, what are we going to eat? How did we end up here? And as you sit there expecting Jesus to do something amazing, well, some guy just shows up with a handful of bread and a little bit of fish. Great, you might think. We came here to see the butcher and he sends us the block. I mean, calling what this guy is carrying, calling it a handful, well, that's probably being pretty generous. Can you imagine it? 12 guys standing around Jesus and someone comes up, well, I've got 5 loaves of bread. Oh, and 2 fish. I wonder how you would feel as the disciple when Jesus hands you half a loaf and the tail. Can you imagine what that would feel like? So there you are, hungry, tired, knackered. This guy comes along carrying the fish tail and half a loaf of bread. And the person next to you, the person next to your neighbor, sticks out their hands And you watch him break off some of the fish and hand it over. And you wonder, as you look to your left, you look to your right at this long line of people, is there going to be anything left for me? And the guy next to you puts out their hands and they receive some bread, they receive some fish. And I wonder, how do you feel? Do you get angry? Or maybe you just burst into tears. Maybe you sit there and just feel the fear inside and the shame of everything. But it's at that moment you have a choice. Will you put out your hands or not? Will you let anger take over? Or will you just hold on in hope? As God's covenant people, we always have a choice. Will we go home? Or will we, like Jacob, wrestle with God to become Israel, to become God's covenant people? I know that as a church, it's easy to feel like we're in the dark, that the future we once looked forward to is gone. It's easy to feel like we've been through 10 rounds already and we wonder how many more rounds do we have left in us. But I would remind you of the words of the Apostle Paul when he said, "When I am weak, then I am strong." It's when we're at our weakest, it's in those moments that we find Christ, that Christ has been with us the whole time. And when we are exhausted, when we just want to give up, that's when we discover how hope can strengthen our hearts and that we are not doing it alone. And when our hips and our knees buckle, that's when we find that love has not left us, but has been helping us the whole time. And I know, if I know one thing about this church, one thing about the parish of Holy Covenant, it's that you are a great bunch of God wrestlers. I know you're limping right now, but that's not the end of the story. I know that you will not be the same as what you are now, because I know that God's blessing is with you. You are God's covenant people. Because when you are weak, that's when you are strong. So as you come to God's table this morning, hold out your hands. Ask God to fill you with the faith and the hope and the love that you need. It might feel like a meager handful, but it will be enough to change you today, tomorrow, and forever. Amen.